From the JAMA Network, this is JAMA Internal Medicine Author Interviews, conversations with authors exploring the latest clinical research, reviews, and opinions featured in JAMA Internal Medicine.
Hello, and welcome to this author interview from the JAMA Network. This is Deanna Balandi with JAMA Internal Medicine. Adherence to medications prescribed after a heart attack is low, but can a system of medication reminders using financial incentives and social support delay subsequent vascular events in patients after a heart attack? Doctors Kevin Volpe and David Ash of the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine in Philadelphia are here to talk about the results of their randomized clinical trial. So Dr. Volpe, let's start with you. First, why is medication so hard and why was it important to conduct this trial?
Medication adherence is a tough problem. One issue is that for chronic indications like this, where you have a heart attack and you're trying to lower your risk of a future heart attack, you need to take these medicines in essence forever. They need to continue even once you feel better. Often many people don't like taking them because they seem to serve as a reminder of an ongoing illness, even when you feel relatively well. They may cause side effects, or they may cause perceived side effects. There's issues of cost. And sometimes people are just forgetful and forget to take them. In terms of why this is important, lots of studies have shown that the rates of people taking all their cardiovascular medicines in the year following a heart attack are surprisingly and perhaps even shockingly low, typically in the range of 40 to 45%. There's lots of data showing that taking those medicines lowers significantly your risk of dying, your risk of a subsequent heart attack. That's why we conducted this study, to see whether a number of different intervention approaches, which are based on both behavioral economic theory and common sense, might have a significant impact in significantly improving medication adherence and thereby reducing the risk of being rehospitalized for some type of events related to your initial heart attack.
So Dr. Ash, let's get into some of the specifics of the trial. Tell me about the patients you recruited, how you divided them up, what kind of incentives and supports it offered, and sort of what outcomes you looked at.
Sure. Well, I think the first thing to say is that this was a large trial, and it was a large randomized clinical trial. We had 1,500 patients in this study. All of them were people who had had a heart attack, had been hospitalized, had survived the heart attack, and were then discharged. Now, all of these patients these days, if you're discharged after a heart attack, you're going to be on three or four medications. Everyone's going to be on aspirin, statin, beta blocker. Maybe they'll be on an antiplatelet agent as well. And as Kevin mentioned, the adherence to those medications can be quite low, and that was what we were trying to fix. So about 1,000 of the patients were randomized to the intervention, and about 500 of them were randomized to control. And those in the intervention received these wireless pill bottles that would allow us to tell whether patients were taking their medications or not, or at least allow us to tell whether they were opening up their pill bottle or not, which is very likely correlated with whether they take their medications or not. And these were paired, this particular technology was paired with a variety of engagement incentives that used really the best techniques we have today in behavioral economics, including lottery-based financial incentives to reward medication taking, including social support, so that participants in the intervention arm were asked and given the option to identify a supporter, you know, it might be a friend or a relative, who would be notified if there had been a lapse in medication adherence. And then as sort of a final backup, there were engagement advisors who were available to assist people with medication adherence. So it was a multi-pronged approach given to the roughly two-thirds of the patients who were randomized into the intervention arm. And what we most wanted to see was a reduction in new clinical events for these patients, rehospitalizations, new vascular procedures, and the like. And we followed them over a year to find out whether there was a difference between the intervention group and the control group.
So Dr. Volpe, tell me, what'd you find?
Well, what we found was a little bit surprising and a little bit disappointing. Our primary outcome was time until first vascular readmission, which is defined as an inpatient hospitalization for a heart attack, unstable angina, stroke, congestive heart failure, or death. And in essence, we found no significant difference between the intervention group or the control group. We also looked at time to the first all-cause readmission, to an observation stay, an ER visit, total number of repeat hospitalizations, Also, no significant differences in terms of medication adherence. We saw a slight increase in adherence from an average of about 42 versus 45% in the most strict definition of adherence, 63 to 66% in a slightly more flexible definition. Neither of those differences were significant. In terms of total cost, we saw lower costs in the intervention group, about $24,000 versus about $29,800 in the control group, but that difference was not significant either. So I will add a couple of caveats. We did find that in some exploratory analyses that patients who had already been readmitted before the intervention, we could enroll them in the intervention, actually did better with the intervention. So there's some subset of people who have disease that's probably severe enough that they're likely to be readmitted very quickly. It took us about 40 days on average from the time we got from the time somebody was discharged from the hospital to when we were able to enroll them because of the delay in getting insurance claims and being able to identify people and enroll them. And so the what I'm referring to is the people who were admitted during that time period. There's also a subset of people, about 70% of people followed the whole intervention, enrolled a family member who then got these alerts if they missed their medication. And we saw some evidence that the intervention worked in them as well, where they did better than those in the control group. But I don't want to overplay that because, of course, those who participated in full in the intervention are different than those who did not, perhaps in ways like their underlying level of motivation. So it's a little bit harder to interpret that.
So, Dr. Ash, do you have any hints as to why this was the case?
Well, first of all, I'd say that it was a surprise, right? We went into this study thinking that it would be effective, and it wasn't. As Kevin said, this was a negative study. In many ways, it was a negative study. That naturally raises the question of why were we surprised? Why didn't this work? You know, so there are a variety of possibilities. One is that it just doesn't work. And now I'm not really going to buy that possibility, in part because we had considerable evidence from other clinical settings that the kinds of things we were trying in this trial tend to work in other settings. So I'm not willing to give up on this and say that it didn't work, although we did not find evidence that it did work. I think another possibility is this, that we enrolled participants through their insurance carriers, and that meant that the way we identified those patients were through their claims, and that meant that there was a delay between the time of their discharge from the hospital and the time that we were able to reach them. That delay sometimes was several weeks long, sometimes more than that. And it's quite possible that had we been able to engage these patients earlier, if, for example, this had been a hospital-based intervention and it could have started at the time of the patient's discharge home or wherever the patient went, then we might have had a greater opportunity to influence those patients and change the course of their care. The reality is that in many cases, these interventions may be deployed through insurance firms, and that's how this intervention was deployed. But we did not find that it worked, and perhaps that was part of the explanation. There are lots of other possibilities. There are always, you know, the particular pill models you use, the technical aspects of this, they never work as perfectly as you would like. There are always things that create noise in a system, you know, and that's also a possibility. But it's not the kind of thing where I am discouraged, right? So I'm discouraged always at the level of the individual study. It would have been great if this had worked. And in fact, everyone would have been happy, right? Who would be against the idea that we could improve the health of patients who had survived a heart attack? Nevertheless, I think we learned enough about what sort of went wrong in the study that may help us in designing better studies and better interventions for the future.
So, Dr. Volpe, how does it sort of translate clinically if something like this doesn't help improve medication adherence?
Well, I think there are a couple of things to note. One is that this was a fairly unique intervention. We got five health plans nationally plus Medicare. So we had Aetna, Horizon Blue Cross in New Jersey, Health First, Humana, Independence Blue Cross. We had participants in 45 different states plus the District of Columbia. So it's the kind of intervention that you could imagine a health plan running. But as David said, there were certain constraints in terms of the timing of when we could enroll people that would be different if you were a healthcare provider and you were running this intervention. And the fact that we did observe a significant improvement in readmission rates among those who had the early readmissions does raise this question of whether enrollment in among patients immediately post-discharge could be one of the critical ingredients in terms of doing this in the future. That's obviously something, if you were a provider who's running this intervention, that you would want to do. I think the reality is that it is difficult to improve adherence for high-risk patients, particularly for conditions which require ongoing adherence indefinitely. But we don't really have the choice of accepting that adherence is 40 to 45% and doing nothing about it. These patients, on average, cost about $30,000 in the year following a heart attack. But more importantly, they're at high risk of having other heart attacks, other hospital readmissions, or even dying. So we have to keep trying to improve on what we've done. And I think it's some combination of thinking about the benefit design, the nature of the intervention, the provider-patient interactions, the health plan-patient interactions, and really thinking about how we can try to more strongly support patients in their efforts to be healthy.
So maybe you both can talk a little bit about what are the sort of immediate next steps, since nobody's giving up on trying to improve medication adherence. What's the next thing in terms of research or designing another intervention that might happen?
Well, you know, I think, you know, it is critically important, as Kevin suggested, not to give up, right? It would be incredibly foolish to believe that we can declare victory after the creation of statins, the creation of beta blockers, the creation of antiplatelet agents, and decide, you know, mission accomplished, when we have adherence levels that are as low as they are. So it's critically important to continue. Now, I think that we found in a variety of other studies that these kinds of engagement strategies can work. And I think that one of the most important lessons of this study is that they work sometimes, sometimes they don't, and there can be incredibly subtle distinctions between the kinds of engagement strategies that work in one context and that don't work, perhaps, in another. That is always an agenda for future research. So I'd like to see studies that start earlier. I'd like to see studies that perhaps change the amount of the financial incentive. I'd like to see new studies that use a kind of electronic pill bottle that might be designed in a different way and that is more compatible with the kind of journey that patients are typically on in this setting. So I think there are all sorts of things that we can attempt to do, and it's totally worth it because lack of adherence creates such a gap between the kind of healthcare that seems theoretically achievable and the kind of healthcare that actually is achieved.
I totally agree with everything David said. In addition, there are a few things that we're doing as next steps. One is to try to better understand why the intervention didn't work in those who were not successful. So we've been going back and doing in-depth interviews with the participants in our intervention who did not succeed in the intervention and trying to better understand why. We've also conducted what our innovation center calls an innovation tournament, where the idea is to ask our patients what are ways in which they think that we could help people improve their medication adherence. So instead of relying on our theory-based interventions based on what we've observed as providers, let's see what we can learn from our patients in terms of what they've found helpful. How can we then channel that in terms of designing the next generation of interventions? And then finally, we've been really thinking about how to approach this from a systems perspective, working both in terms of identifying who among our high-risk patients is not currently on a statin or other similar medicines who perhaps should be based on clinical grounds, and then thinking about combinations of provider and patient interventions that can be helpful in significantly increasing adherence rates, while also thinking about system-level approaches like automatic refill programs or synchronized refills that can make it easier for patients and, in essence, help. Each of these solutions can help improve medication adherence.
Well, thank you both for talking to us about your work. This is Deanna Bilandi with JAMA Internal Medicine. For more author interviews, please visit us online at jamanetworkaudio.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast at Apple Podcast and Stitcher.